Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
She's going to say that until the end of time, or until I'm dead, whichever comes first, probably my own death. But who knows, maybe the end of time is nigh, and we're all going to go at the same time, in which case she'll stop saying that. But either way, when I'm gone is only when she'll stop saying that, because it's always going to be true. I am William Clear, this is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. And I'd like to start just real quickly before we get into everything. I want to start off by asking you to support my Patreon account. And when I ask you to support my Patreon account, what I mean is I don't have a fucking Patreon account. And I'm never going to have a fucking Patreon account. I don't know if you know what a Patreon account is, but it's basically like a version of Kickstarter where it's a subscription service where you actually subscribe to someone's blog or I mean their video blog on YouTube, where they sit in a poorly lit bedroom and just talk shit, or their podcast, whether it's, you know, mid grade, high grade, low grade. Usually the high end ones don't need a Patreon account because they have sponsorships, but the low end ones are constantly peddling their fucking Patreon accounts and trying to get people to pay $5 a month so that they can get better microphones or something like that. I don't know. But I will tell you this, I'll never have one of those goddamn things. I think it's ridiculous. Every time I see someone on YouTube ranting, there's a link in their description to their Patreon account. And it just makes me sick. For two reasons. A, you know, get high quality enough to where you can qualify for at least one sponsor. And, you know, other than that, you should be happy that people are watching your YouTube videos or listening to your podcast. And, you know, that really should be it. And if you have thousands of listeners, you don't need a Patreon account because you can get sponsors. And if you've only got 10 listeners, you just get better. That's my advice. Fucking Patreon accounts. So, speaking of sponsorship and not Patreon accounts, why don't you, instead of paying me $5 a month, treat yourself to a free audiobook with a free 30-day trial of Audible by going to audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. You can have a free audiobook of your choice. You can have it for 30 days, which will give you obviously time to listen to the whole book and also experience all the different features of audible.com. It's got all kinds of cool stuff. It's got a driving mode. It's got like bookmarks and clip savers and everything that you could possibly want for listening to audiobooks. It's not just, you know, plug and play. There's all kinds of cool stuff, and you can try it out free for 30 days. audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. Tell them I sent you, and tell them fuck Patreon. So we're sitting here, we're talking about what? We're talking about gray aliens, and we're going to be talking about gray aliens for the next few episodes of Pop Talk and Aliens, because this is going to be a series of episodes dedicated to the gray aliens. There'll be three, possibly four, but at least three over the next 4 weeks or so, starting with this episode, which will take us from, you know, talking a little bit about ancient aliens and then mostly start at the turn of the century and move our way into 1965 when we had the first big, you know, nationally known abduction case. But I want to give a big broad overview of where these fuckers come from, what, you know, what their point is, if they have one. Are they real? Are they a product of our collective unconscious? Have we just decided from the influence of media and television and comic books and movies that we all agree that these are probably the aliens that come to Earth? Or do they really come to Earth? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about where is the origination of these things? And then why do we all agree on it? Because here is, to me, the perfect summation, sort of encapsulation of why you can talk about gray aliens as being so, although I hate this word, ubiquitous. Every iPhone has like 10 billion emojis, right? And every time they update the software, they just add new emojis and that's the only update. But there's only one alien amongst all of those emojis, and it's the gray alien. And you know the one, you know what I'm talking about, obviously. Guitar pick shaped head, big black eyes, a couple of little pinholes for nostrils, and a straight slit for a mouth. Dangly arms, short, gray, obviously. But that's the emoji you see. You don't see Marvin the Martian or an alien with antennas coming out of its head or an alien from Star Wars or Independence Day or anything like that. You see a gray. That is the sort of universal symbol for alien. In every abduction, it's gray aliens. In the Roswell story, it's gray aliens. In Area 51, it's gray aliens. And I'm going to talk about all those things, even though I have addressed those topics on other podcast episodes. We will need to cover that ground again as we go through the story of the gray aliens. And so, you know, there's been alien autopsy videos, the alien interview, they all feature grays, supposedly real footage. If you want to see the best fake real footage of gray aliens, actually, there's a movie on Netflix called Captured, the Stan Romanek story, which features prominently gray aliens in broad daylight. This guy, I mean, obviously the movie is fake, but he's constantly, and I mean constantly, getting abducted by gray aliens, and he's always got a video camera around, so he gets these very clear pictures of them just in broad daylight, sitting out in front of his house. You know, they're stealing hubcaps, and they're eating dog food in the backyard and stuff like that, and it's just, he's got it all on tape. None of that actually happens, and it's not called Captured, but he does have ridiculously clear, quote-unquote, video of gray aliens. But the reason I bring it up, other than the fact that it's hilarious, is that even the logo for that movie has a big, fat, gray alien head in it, because I really think that if it was called, you know, if it said Captured, the Stan Romanek story, and there was a picture of like an alien with antennas in its head, everyone would be like, get the fuck out of here. That's not about aliens. That's not an alien abduction story. They look at that alien. It doesn't make sense. The ones that capture people are, they got the gray heads. So that's why Stan Romanek did that. Also, he's like a child pornographer or something. He's a fucking terrible human being. But he does have a movie on Netflix called Captured or something. All right, so where does it all start? If you go all the way back to what they call on Ancient Aliens, ancient astronaut theorists, anytime on Ancient Aliens that they want to make a bold claim but not hold themselves responsible for it, they will always say, according to ancient astronaut theorists, or ancient astronaut theorists believe, and then, you know, some ridiculous thing. I'm not a big ancient aliens guy, because I think the lack of obviously witnesses is leaves the stories with a lot of holes that cannot be filled. So I'm kind of into the sort of 20th, 21st century experience of aliens. But it is necessary to go back and talk about what ancient astronaut theorists believe when talking about the gray aliens, because it is said by some that the gray aliens started coming to Earth around the time that the pyramids were built, and that they helped us with that, helped us make pyramids and things like that, and that they were worshipped like gods, and that, you know, things that you can only see from the sky, in Peru, the drawings into the ground, the cave drawings, every sort of, you know, piece of art made by these people hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years ago was actually made to worship the gray aliens, or to celebrate them, or to tell us that they were there helping them out. You can even go as far as the crystal skulls, which were left supposedly thousands of years ago, 13 crystal skulls, which are the skulls of gray aliens. And that if you look in them, you can actually see the future, but you shouldn't look at them, because if you do, it will drive you mad. It's detailed very well in the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I know a lot of people bag on that movie, and you can if you want, but the portrayal of the story of what the crystal skulls are is very accurate in that movie. And then it ends up with a fucking spaceship flying out, flying saucer. Because that's the other thing. We always agree that these aliens fly around on flying saucers. You never see a gray, like a depiction of a gray flying in something that looks like an X-Wing. It's always a flying saucer. So that's the early history. The grays were around during Egyptian times or during ancient times, as Spinal Tap would say, and they helped us along, and they helped us. Maybe they even seeded us, and, you know, we are part of their their DNA. We're just an offshoot of them. And then they kind of drop off. They kind of drop off from the historical annals of time between the Egypt and them building the pyramids and everything. And then once we get up to Roswell and stuff. So let's put the crystal skulls and stuff aside. Because one of the things that a lot of people have talked about when they talk about where did the gray aliens come from and why did they become so ingrained into our subconscious and our consciousness, they point to some things that were written by H.G. Wells in the very late 19th century and early 20th century. H.G. Wells wrote an article or a short story of some sort in 1893 called Man of the Year Million. And in that story, he described that in a million years, we would become these sort of gray, short beings with big heads and black eyes. And then in subsequent stories, he also referenced that same type of being as an alien. And again, it was described very much the same: large head, big black eyes, short, skinny, emotionless. And a lot of people say, well, that's where it comes from. He wrote that stuff, and then, comic books picked it up because it was a good description, and, we were off and running. So then everybody just decided to use that description of aliens, and then when the UFOs crashed at Roswell, everyone just said, sure, that's what they looked like. Yeah, they looked like that. And then when Bob Lazar supposedly saw an alien at Area 51, he was like, yeah, it looked like that. Looked like that thing. Whitley Strieber, when he had his communion with aliens when he was abducted. Yeah, it looked like that. Sure. Why not? Old H.G. Also wrote about those gray aliens in his famous War of the Worlds story, which kind of begs the question, why was H.G. Wells so obsessed with this type of vision of an alien? Was it just because it was something he made up that he thought was cool? Or did he actually know about them? Had he seen one himself, possibly? Did something come before his description of them that debunkers and skeptics always like to point to as that? It's just because H.G. Wells, it all comes from that. And then everything else just came from the H.G. Wells thing and the War of the Worlds, which, by the way, I'm sure you're familiar with, but it's worth touching on the famous story of War of the Worlds, where it was 1938 and Orson Welles read War of the Worlds on the radio as like a live broadcast. He did it in the style of it being like a bulletin, like a radio bulletin. And tons of people heard it because, radio was king back then. So people turned it on and they freaked the fuck out. And everyone, there was pandemonium because people thought we were being invaded by aliens.
Hump shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lords are turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. It's coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late bulletin from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude.
I don't know, man. I think if I were listening to anything and they stopped for a piano interlude, whatever worries I had about whatever I was watching or listening to would kind of fade away. And so that's always a great story. There's varying reports of exactly how much pandemonium there was. I like to think that the streets were full of panic and people were just like setting themselves on fire and stuff, but it probably wasn't all that bad, but definitely people got scared because of Orson Welles reading War of the Worlds, the H.G. Wells story that featured gray aliens. And it also featured gray aliens coming down to Earth in flying saucers. This is something else that has been passed along with the grays. As I said before, they're not in X-Wings, they're always in flying saucers. And the flying saucer thing can also be traced back even further than H.G. Wells, which to be honest, I don't want to misspeak. I don't know that actually flying saucers were in War of the Worlds. I don't know if H.G. Wells actually mentioned flying saucers, but they were certainly mentioned in so much fiction, comic books, pulp novels, and then movies and everything. As I said, Indiana Jones. But the flying saucer thing actually goes back as far as, you know, maybe even earlier than this, but certainly it was documented well in the 15th century. There was a painting where it's a painting of Mary, and in the background, there's a little flying saucer. You may have seen it on your favorite Ancient Aliens, or it's been depicted on many, many shows about conspiracies and aliens and stuff. But yeah, there's like a fucking flying saucer in this painting. The painting is actually called The Madonna with Saint Giovannino, and it was painted by a guy whose name I cannot pronounce. You put that together, that first flying saucer with, you know, possibly the crystal skulls, but definitely H.G. Wells, and you marry those things, those two visual ideas, and for some reason everyone starts to take hold of that. All of the particularly in the 40s and 50s, the novels, pulp novels, like, you know, B novels and comic books, and then soon to be B movies. It was constantly this gray alien and the variations of it. Sometimes it was tall and had a big head, and sometimes it was, you know, the wiry little ones that look like kind of what we think they look like and what we see on the iPhone and everything. And also, do you think on an alien's iPhone they have one human emoji? Like, they have like a billion of alien of their own little alien emojis, and there's one like little human guy. And they debate about this. Who knows? But these aliens became prominent in fiction. And when Roswell happened, the aliens, or I guess I should set up Roswell a little bit if you don't know or haven't listened to my other podcasts. In 1947, a rancher named Mac Brazel found a bunch of shit on his ranch. Bunch of fucking tinfoil, or as he described it, and as many military officers who went to pick it up out of the field near his ranch described it. It was a metallic material that if you bent it, it would just come right back up to its original shape. If you burnt it, you couldn't burn it, you couldn't tear it, you couldn't destroy it. It would just always constantly fold back out into a perfectly straight, uncrumpled form. And along with that story, eventually came the story of a second crash that wasn't just a bunch of shit in this guy's lawn, but was actually, you know, a piece of a spaceship with gray aliens in it. A couple of them burnt to a crisp beyond recognition, and one of them that may or may not have been still alive when they captured it. The interesting thing about the Roswell story, though, and those bodies, is that when Roswell happened, it was highly publicized. A lot of people think it wasn't. But when this supposed spaceship crashed, and it was a flying saucer, it was announced in the paper with the consent of the military. It was announced to have been a flying disc that the military had captured in Roswell outside of Roswell Military Base. And there's a famous picture of this, it's a famous headline, flying disc discovered outside of Roswell, or it says, you know, whatever it is. And people always say, well, you know, whatever, it was just that little fucking local nickel and dime paper. But it wasn't. It was picked up all over the place.
The Army may be getting to the bottom of all this talk about the so-called flying saucer. As a matter of fact, the 509th Atomic Bomb Group headquarters at Roswell, New Mexico, reports that it has received one of the discs which landed on a ranch outside Roswell. The disc landed at a ranch at Corona, New Mexico, and the rancher turned it over to the Air Force. Rancher W.W. Brazel was the man who discovered the saucer. Colonel William Blanchard of the Roswell Air Base refuses to give details of what the flying disc looks like. In Fort Worth, Texas, where the object was first sent, Brigadier General Roger Ramey says that it is being shipped by air to the AAF Research Center at Wright Field, Ohio.
There were many broadcasts like that, and then shortly thereafter, the military came out and said, no, it was just a weather balloon. It was a crashed weather balloon. It's nothing but a bunch of sticks and tinfoil. Don't worry about it. And Jesse Marcel, who eventually later, years later, came out and told this whole story, posed for you know, a follow-up newspaper article where he was holding this tinfoil. And he claims that, you know, he was given tinfoil to show to the media, but that the actual spaceship stuff was tucked away. And Jesse Marcel's a weird player in all of this because he was not some scrub. He was a highly decorated intelligence officer and, you know, was a technician who worked on explosives and stuff. And he was actually part of the group that bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, although he did not have to go to that. He was sent home before that, so he was spared being complicit in that atrocity. But it's kind of hard to discredit a guy like that and just say, I don't know, I guess that day he didn't understand what tinfoil was. Probably he did understand what tinfoil was all the time, that day and every other day of his life.
It was not anything from this earth that I'm quite sure of, because I was being an intelligence officer, I was familiar with just about all materials used in aircraft and in our air travel. This is nothing like that. It could not be. It could not have been.
So he came out in the 70s and finally started spilling his guts about Roswell, because at the time, Roswell came flying disc. Sorry, not a flying disc. It was a weather balloon, and the story kind of went away. And then Marcel comes out years later, starts spilling his guts, flapping his gums, all about that, you know, the magical tinfoil, and you couldn't burn the stuff, and it was a spaceship, definitely extraterrestrial. He went to his grave saying that. He stole a piece of the wreckage and showed his son, and his son saw it, and his son recently died, and he said, you know, to his grave, extraterrestrial. No way that thing was made on Earth. But the bodies from Roswell, those weren't really talked about until, again, that same period in the 70s when Marcel came out, because, like I said, the story came and went, and no one really talked about actual aliens there. But once that story started to come out, when Marcel kind of started the ball rolling on people opening up their mouths about it, that's when we started hearing about alien bodies and military people saying that they were witness to gray aliens in a box being carried, you know, via transport from Roswell to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Apparently there were three aliens. Some say there were more, some say there were less, but the generally agreed upon story is that there were three aliens, two of them burnt to a crisp, and the third one either still alive or almost alive or just having died, and that was the one that was, you know, taken to the Air Force Base. The other ones were, there's a guy named Glenn Dennis, who was the mortician in Roswell, and he claims that the military called him and asked if he had little caskets, tiny little caskets. And then he also claims that he knew this nurse that said that they brought the alien bodies into the hospital, the ones that were burnt to a crisp, and that the stench was something she'd never forget. And then, you know, so he put two and two together and said, oh, well, that must have been what the caskets were for these little alien bodies. And Glenn Dennis' story changed a million times over the years, and it's impossible to take him with any credibility. And he's the kind of guy that fucks up the Roswell story, because every military guy that says that they may have caught a glimpse of a gray alien, specifically gray alien, in a box, there's always like 10 Glenn Dennises who say that they saw the fucking bodies stealing hubcaps and, you know, eating at the restaurant and burnt to a crisp and in the hospital with this, and they knew a nurse, and like, as if the military is going to call them and ask them for caskets, like they're going to give a proper burial to these aliens. Jesus Christ, you stuff them in whatever you can and you take them to the base, right? So if that happened, the likelihood is that one went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. But again, the gray aliens are a story and an image and a cultural icon that comes all the way between Roswell and today. So the fact that they didn't talk about the gray alien bodies when Roswell actually happened, that speaks to them coming from something else. And again, you can go back to the H.G. Wells thing. You can go back to the Crystal Skulls. You can go to these 50s novels, you know, the shitty paperback, trade paperbacks. And then you can say, well, maybe that influenced the idea that these Roswell people had. But again, that comes back to what I was saying before, is why would all these people from Roswell, let's say that of all the, you know, hundreds of people that claim they saw something, let's say that maybe, let's just be real conservative and say that like 11 of them had credibility. Why would they all describe that alien? Well, the Air Force says that they were crash test dummies. That yes, there was a second crash containing crash test dummies that happened at the exact same time as their radar balloon experiment. So Roswell happens, everyone says flying disc. Then later they say, yes, flying disc, but also second crash with aliens, one of them, you know, two of them burnt to a crisp. And the Air Force at first says, well, it's just a weather balloon. And then when they come out with the bodies, the Air Force says, ah, there's no bodies, what are you talking about? Then years later, as the body stories keep coming and coming, the Air Force says, okay, there were bodies, but they were crash test dummies. All right, just happened to happen around the same time. And so that is that story. But then we get to something that I've never talked about on this podcast before. And it could have been an episode all to itself, but it works better in this context. And that is the story of Betty and Barney Hill. Now, there's three major things that come into play when you talk about Betty and Barney Hill. The first is, this is really the first occasion where a human being said that they, you know, specifically saw a full-on gray alien. Not an alien in a box, not an alien in a casket, not some burnt to a crisp alien in a hospital, but an actual gray alien. Number two, they actually interacted with it. Number three, and the most spectacular of all, these aliens showed this woman a map to where they live. They fucking gave her directions to their planet. And their planet is located, apparently, in the Zeta Reticuli star system, which is a real star system, and it is but 39 light years away only. Also, that is approximately 12 parsecs, which is the distance that it took Han Solo to make the Kessel Run. Zeta Reticuli is a binary star system, which also calls back to Star Wars because so's Tatooine, which, you know, makes me think, did George Lucas know something? There is actually a theory, just to sidetrack really quickly, there is a theory that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas are like on the ins about alien visitations, and part of their job is to desensitize us to the possibility by showing us, you know, gray aliens and other worlds and all these things. And, you know, slowly but surely, if we keep seeing enough of these things, we'll finally buy into the idea that there's aliens, and then we'll be more accepting of them, which would play into the idea of, again, the little gray guy in your iPhone, that we are so acclimatized to the idea that these are the aliens, that if one of them finally did show up in your backyard, a la Stan Romanek, you'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm not that afraid of that thing. I've seen it a million times. That's an alien. I get it now. There they are. But that has not happened yet, unless you're Betty Hill, in which case it did happen to you. Betty and Barney Hill are driving around New Hampshire. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And then they start to see something up in the sky that looks like maybe it's like a twinkling star. Maybe a twinkling planet. But then they start to think that that twinkling is not so much twinkling as it is erratic movement. So they're trying to keep an eye on this thing because it seems to be darting around, this light in the sky. But they're in New Hampshire where there's fucking trees everywhere, so they can't keep track of it. So finally they stop. And Barney gets out, and luckily he had a pair of binoculars on him. And so he gets out of the car, and the thing's getting closer now. So he gets out his binoculars, and he can see now that the thing is multicolored lights. It's not just one bright light. It's many colors. And as it gets even closer to him, he can see windows. And in the windows, guess who? Grays. Fucking gray aliens. Terrified. Gets back in the car, and they start driving. Now, as they resume their journey home, they don't see it anymore. It's gone. Just, you know, out of the blue, the thing is gone. But they realize that they were suddenly 35 miles farther than where they were minutes ago when they saw the goddamn thing. So they went home, and they went to bed. I don't know how they slept. I don't know why they didn't go tell somebody. Who knows? Who knows what happens to the human mind when, you know, you're looking in the sky, you see a bright light, you look closer, all of a sudden you see grays in the window, and then 2 seconds later you're 35 miles away from where you were. Terrifying. But the next afternoon, Betty actually did call some family tell her what happened, you know, told them what happened, told her sister, I think. And her sister said, you know, call the goddamn Air Force base, you know, see if they saw something, for God's sake. So she did. She called Peace Air Force Base. And she reported what happened. And she talked to this major. And he told her that they saw something on their radar. That they saw some bizarre moving object on their radar. And the thing was, at least what Betty said, was that when she was calling them, she was actually hoping that they would say they didn't see anything. That she would, you know, that it would have just have been some sort of dream or some sort of hallucination. But instead, they confirmed that they saw it. So Betty tries to let it go. Barney tries to let it go. But then poor Betty starts having these nightmares and these nightmarish visions. And it gets worse and worse to the point where she actually wrote a letter to the military. And the chain of custody of this letter gets very complicated, so I will skip it. But it eventually ended up in the hands of someone who recommended that she have regressive hypnosis. 6 fucking months of these things. This poor woman, she's having nightmares all the time. Goddamn Barney is developing an ulcer. Yeah, the one doctor, she went to one first who said that she had anxiety disorder, and then she finally got to another one who, you know, started really doing it. And after 6 months, they finally got to pull out bald-headed alien beings, 5 feet, gray, cat-like eyes. And this, ladies and gentlemen, really, in the entire UFO folklore of someone actually seeing a gray, is really the first full-on description of one from the point of view of a human being, again, from a human being actually saying that they saw one. And she said that she was tested by them, not, you know, put through trials, but, you know, literally that they performed tests on her. And she had hair, skin samples, nail samples were taken. She said she had a long needle inserted right into her navel and told it was a pregnancy test. They told her that via their brains. And now Barney, because he is under the same regressive hypnosis, by the way, because God knows what happened to him, right? Well, it turns out he was abducted too. So here we're going to actually listen to an actual part of the recording of Betty and Barney Hill's regressive hypnosis. You're going to hear Barney talk here a little bit. And this is a very interesting clip because it starts off quite funny with him comparing the alien to a Chinee, and then becomes very disturbing at the end.
His eyes were slanted. I see it so. His eyes were slanted, but not like a Chinee.
What was Betty doing all this time?
I'm not close to her. I don't know.
You're out there by yourself, huh? You don't think of her. Is she saying anything?
I can't hear her.
Did you make any outcry to her, the way you did to me?
I can't remember. I don't know. I did not.
You would remember it if you did.
I did not. But I know This creature, this leader, is telling me something.
He's telling you something. How? How is he getting it to you?
I can see it in his face.
Do you see his lips move? Yes.
No, his lips aren't moving.
Yes, go on. He's telling you.
And he's looking at me.
What did he tell you?
Stay there and keep looking. Just keep looking and stay there. And just keep looking. Just keep looking.
Could you hear him tell you?
Oh, I got to pull these binoculars away from my eyes. Because if I don't, I'll just keep staying there.
Could you hear him tell you this?
Oh, no, he didn't say it.
You felt he said it.
I know.
You know he said it.
Just there, yeah. Just stay there, he's saying to me.
All right.
I'll take in my head. Pull the binoculars away. God, give me strength.
This is why I don't really do abduction stories on Pop Talk and Aliens, but this one is key to the story, because this is really like the first classic appearance of a Dick Gray. I don't mean by dick like, you know, putting stuff into poor Barney Hill's dick. I mean that he's just a dick. He would do this to poor Barney and Betty. So he gives, these aliens give Betty a pregnancy test. They take some of Barney's semen. And then to make up for it, they gave her a book. A little book as a gift, token gift. And then they decided, well, you know what? It's not a good idea to do that because that's evidence that she visited us. So then they took the book back. So they, you know, they were a dick about it again. But she did get to see, whether it was from this book or from some holographic image is debatable, but one way or another, they showed her a map to their planet. And when she was under this regressive hypnosis, she drew a picture of the map. And at the time, it was not known, it was not charted in any, you know, astronomical, no astronomer had mapped out this area of the galaxy, so it was, you know, you're full of shit. Thanks for the story. Maybe this will help with your nightmares. Years later, as the story goes, and I do mean story, they actually did map out exactly what she had drawn. And if you search Betty Hill's star map on Google, you will find many, 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 many representations of this in the Zeta Reticuli system. Now, poor Betty died before she could be vindicated and see that this, that apparently the star map that she drew was a real thing. You can't feel too bad, though, for Betty Hill, because when she got older, she let us in on a part of the story that wasn't known earlier, and that is that she fucking kicked one of the aliens' asses. And I'll let Betty tell you right from her own mouth.
They walk you up this ramp. You're brought in, and what did they say they were going to do with you?
Well, when we got up to the door, I was not going to go in. So I socked them.
You punched the entity?
Yeah. In fact, I put up such a battle that my dress was badly torn. And he said, you know, come on. All we want to do is some simple tests. And as soon as the tests are over, we'll take you back to your car.
But that is the first sort of big time abduction story. It is worth noting, though, getting back to whether or not these things come from actual existence or if they come from culture. There was a show called The Outer Limits. I know there's been one recently, but back in the 60s, there was a show called The Outer Limits, and there was an episode called The Bolero Shield. And in that episode, there was a gray alien. And he was not like exactly what we think of as the gray alien, but he was reminiscent enough of what we think of the gray alien that a lot of people say that that's what Betty was imagining. She had seen this TV show, and it wasn't that long before her trip through New Hampshire and her trip through the stars that she saw this episode. So of course she just put that together through regressive hypnosis, because there is debate about the nature of regressive hypnosis and whether or not it actually does conjure up actual memories, or if it conjures up just shit that you decide from dreaming a lot and being, you know, suggested to by a hypnotherapist and so forth. But we can leave that there. Except to say that a lot of hypnotherapists and psychologists believe that what a gray alien actually is some sort of manifestation of our memories of when, you know, we were first born and how we saw everything with, you know, I mean, I'm talking like when we were first born, like we come out, we can barely see. And these, so what we see through our inability to properly focus and first ever seeing light for the first time, we see these brightly lit rooms with these figures that have like skinny bodies and big heads. And that's what abductions are. We're just, if you go, most people who have been abducted or claim to have been abducted will go through these regressive hypnosis therapy sessions, and they will describe these gray aliens with a big head and lanky arms, and they're gray. And it you could make the argument that if you were a tiny little baby and somehow you were able to have your memory stirred enough through regressive hypnosis that you could actually recall the first moments of your life, it would all be gray. It would all be blurry. It would all be bright. And everyone would have fucking big heads, big eyes. Everything would look huge. So maybe that's it. Maybe it all just comes down to that. Except, again, that is why I don't get into abduction stories a lot, because there's also a theory that if certain people have sleep paralysis, and that when you have sleep paralysis, you kind of hallucinate. You're in this theta state of brain waves where you're imagining, having really random thoughts, and that one of the common themes of people's thoughts and distorted imagery that they get when they're in sleep paralysis is something similar to a gray alien. I've never seen the evidence of that. Thankfully, I've never had sleep paralysis, so I don't know either. But the childhood thing kind of makes sense to me, or at least sparks my imagination as to the possibilities of, could you possibly imagine your first moments on Earth? Or are you imagining moments that are not of this Earth, and you're not imagining, you're just remembering? We'll never know. One thing we do know, though, to wrap up part one of this three-part series of gray aliens, where they come from, what they want, what they're doing, who they are. One thing that debunkers and skeptics talk about a lot now that actually has some credence to it and is a pretty decent argument is that if there were grays and people were running into them all the time, if Barney Hill could get gray aliens in his binoculars that he could see, why, with everyone now having camera phones and everyone having that little gray guy on their iPhone, why has no one actually captured a gray on real video? There's fucking cameras everywhere. We all have one. It's a good argument to be made. I mean, obviously, Stan Romanek in his Captured movie did. He's got him all over the place. He's running through his house, in the backyard and all that. We talked about that. But nothing actually real like that exists. Unless you are to believe certain YouTube videos or certain pictures on the internet. Because here again, we get into the quagmire of skeptic versus believer versus the agnostic. Someone like me, is that there are hundreds of thousands of videos of UFOs or possible spacecrafts on YouTube, on MUFON, the UFO site that people report UFOs to. They're everywhere. You can choose to believe that they're all UFOs. You can choose to believe that none of them are. There's thousands and thousands of videos of people swearing to God that they videotaped a gray. You can believe all of them. You can believe one of them. You can believe none of them. And it all comes down really to what you choose to believe, what you're convinced of, what you're not convinced of. But I always recommend that you keep an open mind. And believe me, we are not done talking about this. I'm going to continue to explore this topic. We have only reached 1965, ladies and gentlemen. We have stopped at 1965. We haven't even gotten to the 80s when shit really went nuts with the gray aliens. And then the 90s, 1997 was a seminal year. And we'll get up into today. But for now, that is the Gray Aliens 101 version of Pop Talk and Aliens. Advanced gray studies will come in part two. And then finally, you will graduate with full knowledge of the grays in part three. And that will all happen in the month of March. So, as I like to say when I finish up, thank you for listening. Fuck Patreon and cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.